Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by two special guests on this bonus episode. I'm with Ben and Sim from We Are Tottenham TV. Welcome, both.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure. Our pleasure.
Really good to come on.
So I better get you to say, so people know who's who, because this is audio only, and people who haven't watched your channel. So if I start off by asking Ben a question.
Yeah.
Ben, how would you describe your channel to people who haven't seen it before?
Well, I think it's a channel for run by passionate Spurs fans that were like going week in, week out for our whole lives, pretty much. We cover everything and anything to do with Tottenham, daily uploads, literally. We upload 2, 3 to 4 times a day. And basically, our mission is to kind of give Spurs fans a voice. And, you know, definitely in these day and age, we really need it. Definitely with the way the club's run and everything. So I think that the main aim of like this channel was to give Spurs fans a kind of voice and a platform to voice their opinions.
Nice. I'm really keen to talk about your thoughts on Enoch out at some point in this conversation. Sim, your channel's sort of... you've progressed a lot, really. I mean, you've come a long way. Let's put it that way. You've worked really hard, the pair of you, and you've really changed the way you work and the style of videos you're putting out. They're very sort of they're very polished now, if I may say. Obviously, clearly well researched. The sound quality is excellent. There's nice visuals. You know, when one of you speaking, the camera zooms in and it looks really professional. Talk us through the sort of genesis of the videos, where it started and what it's like now.
Yeah, so kind of when we started the channel, it was kind of, we were kind of just doing match day vlogs, really. Me, my brother Ben, and my grandpa going to the game, and we usually just have the camera and like we just basically record our day out, how the day goes and everything. And as we've kind of been, we tested different things, like, you know, top five FA Cup goals and all these things, and we kind of just throwing things at the wall, because we're such passionate Spurs fans, we kind of wanted something to channel our passion into, because obviously we love going week in, week out and everything, but we just find we kind of wanted an avenue to get our opinions out there, just for a bit of, it was a laugh and a joke. And then it's just kind of making content in our bedrooms, basically, in our house, in our living room. And then we kind of got involved with a friend of my dad's who runs a multi-channel network. And he basically offered to help us like progress the channel quite a bit. So we got involved with him, and he has a studio, and so we started using the studio on a much regular basis. And obviously during lockdown, we were making content at home, but ever since kind of the beginning of second lockdown, we've been in the studio pretty much every single day, and we've kind of just made it I wouldn't say a habit, we've kind of made an aim to kind of use the studio as much as possible to make everything look as professional as possible. And as soon as we started making things more professional and started making things look a lot sleeker, and we saw the growth absolutely massively over the last year or so, is it was really, really grown a lot. And we've been doing this channel for 4 years now, and it's really, I'd say, only in the last year we've seen a massive growth. When we've got our production guy Frank in the background, he's the one who's helped us a lot. He's not even a football fan; he doesn't know anything about football, but he knows how to make things look nice, and that's pretty much what his job is. And yeah, I mean, us personally, my brother Ben, he has like skills in editing and stuff, and he can do some basic editing. But in terms of like all the production value we have, that's all to do with a production guy we have in the back end, basically. So he knows where to put the cameras. He's got the cameras ready. He knows. He pretty much set up this whole studio in the background.
He built this from scratch.
He built this whole studio from scratch. Obviously, you can't see it. It's only audio. But we're currently in the studio as we're speaking. But yeah, he built this whole studio we're in from scratch. So it's been a big journey. I watch our videos back from early days, and I cringe a bit when I see us sometimes when the videos, but it's nice, I guess.
Because at the beginning, we'd never been in front of camera before. We've never held a camera before. Like my brother said, I could edit to a very, very basic level. My brother had never seen a Premiere or Final Cut Pro or anything like that before. I mean, we had no clue what we were getting into, and we came into it kind of naive as well, because we thought, yeah, we'll start off a YouTube channel, we'll upload a couple of videos and see where it goes. But it was mainly a hobby. We didn't look at it as anything else. And to see where we have come from then, when I look at my videos, it seems like just too nervous teenagers looking at each other and talking to each other instead of talking to camera. But now it's like a whole big production, and I'm really proud of what we've achieved in these 4 years.
You should be seriously proud. It's very impressive. And you know, I mentioned that you graft. The pair of you seriously put the hours in. It's you're prolific on YouTube, and it's not like you're just putting out nonsense content. It's all relevant. It's all so for example, today it's Wednesday 26th of May. You put out 3 videos in the last 24 hours since the season's closed. You've done player ratings and 2 other videos. It's really good stuff. And so, you know, there is this huge demand for football content and, you know, club content, and you're getting serious numbers on your videos now. It's really super impressive, and like I say, you should be massively proud. Ben, I'm interested, did you have any ambitions to do this professionally, or did you just literally fall into it because it was a hobby that became possible?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have any ambitions to take it professionally at all at the beginning. I mean, when I first started out, I was running my own social media business. So I was helping different businesses kind of reap the benefits of social media and what have you. And yeah, basically, we didn't have any ambitions to take it professionally. It was literally just a hobby. We were going to the games anyway, so we thought, why not just put it on video and document our day on video? And then kind of one thing led to another, and basically we started doing more and more increased videos as the years went by. And then you can see where we are now. We're literally making 3 to 4 videos a day. We've got a team working with us every day. I mean, it's actually mind-blowing just talking to you about it, to be honest.
And Sim, this is a bit of a tricky one, because I'm going to mention Arsenal Fan TV.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, I don't want to compare you to Arsenal Fan TV, because clearly there is no comparison. I mean, I think it's genuinely worth stating that you're doing very different things to Arsenal Fan TV.
Thank you.
But knowing how Spurs fans feel about Arsenal Fan TV, and therefore the sort of the negative view that fans might have of YouTubers generally, how has your channel been received?
I would say at the start, obviously, there's obviously going to be people who immediately see the words Tottenham and TV together and completely just their mind goes in a rage and they start getting angry and they start like messaging you like horrible things. But like, I think in the start, in like the 4 years, there's obviously been backlash. There's always going to be backlash. You can't please everyone. I think we were a bit aware, I think, at the start, especially Ben was definitely acutely aware of what the potential reaction could be if we did start a fan channel. But we both definitely made it it was definitely at the forefront of our minds that we wanted to do things in our kind of own style, in our way. We didn't want to be like Arsenal Fan TV. We wanted to create our own stamp on the Football Fan Channel community in that way. So we weren't looking to copy anyone's model. We were looking to grow in our own way. And obviously when things are negative and you know, players are playing rubbish, that obviously needs to be called out. But we're not basically just going on the we weren't our plan was never to just go on the camera and start running chanting all the time and everything like that. We were, I think in general, we're much more, we tried to be, maybe not this season, we're much more like positive fans. We tried to look on the brighter side of things. And we, you know, we did start the channel at a very bright moment for Tottenham. Our first video was near the end of the season of the last season of White Hart Lane. So we chose that. We didn't choose a bad moment to start. We chose a positive moment because that's kind of how we were feeling it at the time.
I don't know if you remember though, but right at the beginning, we looked at AFTV and we were like, this is the model that we don't want to replicate.
Pretty basically. Much, yeah.
That's what our business model was at the beginning, basically. Do not replicate AFTV, because when you think about it, at that time, there was still a lot. Football YouTube was big and it was growing and it was kind of blowing up at that time. But there was a lot of channels that didn't follow the model of AFTV, like Red Men TV, like The United Stand, like a few other channels of
Stretford
that ilk.
Paddock and all them, yeah.
Stretford
yeah, yeah.
Paddock, you know, that did things in the right way, in the right way that should be done, unlike AFTV, let's say. And those were the kind of models that we thought we'd aspire to.
Yeah, and if we have had people come up to us and be horrible and like say things in our face, and like, even like, you know, I've had been with my grandpa at games, and people have some like very small minority of people have said horrible things. But in general, I must say, in the 4 years we've been doing this channel, in general, it's been very, very positive, extremely positive. Like, we've got a lot of good feedback, and I think the community, we've built a really nice community, especially on YouTube, with people who really love the channel. And we, you know, I would say like 95, probably even more, of the messages we receive and the feedback we get is extremely positive from people. So I think there was maybe a bit more backlash at the beginning, especially as one video we put out very early on. I think when we lost to West Ham again in the Olympic Stadium, and we kind of lost the league that game, we put out a video and that was really poorly received, and we received a lot of backlash. Well, you know, when you're doing things early on, you learn from your mistakes, and you learn from what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. And I think we did learn from that. And I think in general, since then, it's been pretty positive, I would say.
Yeah,
I'm really glad to hear that. And, you know, frankly, anyone confronting you and being rude to you is just completely, that's reprehensible behaviour. It's unacceptable behaviour. And you certainly don't deserve that. I'm interested in the fan cam element. So this is a vaguely, I would say, controversial element of fandom. It's obviously like, it's a young person's thing, and older people wouldn't necessarily understand it because perhaps they don't watch YouTube in the same way. It's, you know, I'm generalizing here. Do you get much pushback from recording yourself at matches?
Yeah, I mean, probably the most pushback we've had on any of our videos is probably our match day vlogs, where we're recording ourselves in the stadium. I mean, not so much on home games. I would say majority at away games. When we're going to away games and people don't want to be in the video and stuff like that, we've had a bit of aggro in the past at certain away games. But I think on a whole, like my brother said to the previous question, I think everything's been really positively received. It's just like a very small section in the fan base that go week in, week out, that you see regularly at away games. I mean, they don't give you like an argument why you should stop. They just tell you, oh, you should stop, you're just trying to be like AFTV. But they're not interested in opening a normal dialogue with you. They're just you know, just talking gibberish in your face, basically.
But also for fan cams, we were very hesitant to start doing fan cams, to be honest. I think we didn't do it for like 2 years. Yeah. I think we didn't do fan cams at all. But then we realized by not doing fan cams, it is just me and my brother kind of giving our opinions on Spurs and everything. And we wanted to kind of open it up to more fans to give their opinions, to share the platform with us. Eventually we did start doing it, and to be honest, we've done fan cams at like home games and stuff, and there's never really, I can't remember too many issues we've ever had with the fan cams.
I think the only issues I can remember is from vlogging. I don't remember any issues.
Well, to be honest, the only issues we've had are from Spurs trying to kind of stop us recording, and that was in the stadium and stuff like that.
But then they okayed it in the end.
But then we could, because Ben kind of knows the steward quite personally. He's seen him in very away games like for the last decade and stuff. So he had a word, and they okayed it with the club. But other than that, like in terms of fans coming up to us or anything, fan cams has never really been an issue, to be honest.
That's good to hear. And obviously, throughout lockdown, you've not been able to go to games and take your cameras with you. And so you've been doing a different style of videos. Is the plan to sort of take the camera back into the stadium once things open up again?
Well, we just renewed our season tickets, so
I guess you've got in early.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think the deadline is in a couple of days' time, I think. Next week. So, look, our plan is to go back to football because I really miss, like, the camaraderie of going to games, going, you know, in the middle of nowhere in Europe and just seeing the same faces and going up and down the country. I absolutely love it. I've been doing it since I've been going like pretty much every single game since I was about 15, 16. And I'm, wow. I don't want to say my age now, but I'm 31 now, nearly 32.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
impressive commitment.
Yeah. We're still discussing internally in terms of what the plan is throughout the whole season, because we have built this really nice online community, especially with the watch-alongs. Like, we interact with the fans while watching the game, and then we kind of get fans calling in from all over the world, pretty much from the US and from so many places after games. So we don't want that to stop either. So we are probably going to still carry on the watch-along format we do, but I think we're probably not going to be the ones either running it every single game, or we might be taking it turns or something. But we're definitely going to be back at football, but it's just whether we're still deciding how many games we go back to and how we're going to plan it all out, because it's very complicated, because people kind of just love the interaction they get with us while we're watching the game, which you're not going to get obviously if we're at the game. So it's a decision we have to make, but we are definitely going to be returning to football, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately I spent all my time since I was 16 building up my loyalty points up to about 600, 650 now. So yeah, there's no chance I'm giving that up.
Amazing, amazing. Let's talk a little bit about Spurs stuff. I mean, I'm interested firstly to pick up on the stuff around Enoch out and the protest.
Yeah.
I mentioned it on our podcast that I was impressed by you both actually doing something. I think lots of people talk a lot about Enoch out. Which is fine, you know, we all have our opinions on the ownership of our football club, and that's something. But I think if you're vociferously anti-Enoch, you need to back it up with some sort of action. Yeah. And you two did that. Tell us a little bit about where that all started and why you started to believe you needed to do something.
Well, I think throughout the years of Enoch, me and my brother have always kind of given them the benefit of the doubt. Kind of all the missed signings, all the times that we haven't pushed on when we needed to push on, all the times where we get to a certain level and we kind of go three steps backwards, you know, the Stratford thing, the furlough thing. And I think that when the Super League hit, I think that was the final straw for us. And that's when the penny really dropped in both of our minds, where we were both being like, look, this is the end of the line. I mean, their position is untenable now, where they're trying to literally ruin football, rip the heart and soul out of the club. And for me and my brother, I know that was definitely the final line. And I think we both put our foot down. And I think the day the Super League was announced, I actually went down to the stadium with like me and two other guys. And I was like, come on, I put a message out on Twitter, come on, everyone come and join us. But no one did. But everyone's shouting, yeah, Enoch out, we need to protest. But ultimately only three of us ended up going down to the stadium. But I think it was the Super League that really made us sit up and realize, like, what's going on here? Yeah. Because this is not right.
I think for me, I haven't always been like defending Enoch, but I've always kind of seen where they're coming from. I've always kind of bought their excuses like, we're thinking about the long-term vision of the club. Once we get in the stadium, we're going to have loads of money, like once the fans come in and everything. And for every excuse they've always given for whatever happens in the past, I've kind of sort of seen the bigger picture and think, okay, they are thinking of the long-term future of the club. Maybe they're looking for sustainability, and I get that. But once the Super League hit, and then it kind of became very clear that was the actual long-term vision they were looking at. That was actually what they were going for. And that, to me, was completely unacceptable. They were trying to take the club away from the fans. That's how it felt. I felt betrayed by them accepting the Super League. And a lot of people make excuses for them, saying, you know, it's better to be in it than not to be in it, and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? There were bigger clubs than Tottenham that rejected the Super League. So there is no reason injuries, I know Tottenham might feel like they were lucky to be chosen, but for me, what they attempted to do was completely disgraceful and unacceptable. And that, and then it kind of made me re-look at everything they've done in a different kind of light. It made me kind of recontextualize their past. And maybe that's wrong to do, but it kind of felt like, for all this time, they have been putting business ahead of football, and I have been kind of defending them, but I can't defend them anymore for what they tried to do. And if that's where they wanted to take the club, then I can't stand by it anymore. And I know it's impossible to get them out, and you know we're going to need someone to buy if we want to really get them out. But at least we have to send a message that what they tried to do is completely unacceptable, and what was attempted can't be accepted. So I think that's why we kind of started. We didn't organise a protest, but we were definitely fully behind it.
I really admire your stance on this, and were my own personal circumstances different and I didn't consider myself still locked down, I'd be there with you all the way at the stadium. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to make your voice heard. You kind of touched on it a little bit there. We had a question from Stuart Trier who said, if Enoch were to sell, who do they, meaning you, think would buy the club, and why do you think that they would do any better?
Look, that's the £2 billion question, quite literally £2 billion question. But look, ultimately, that's an impossible question to answer because you don't know who's willing to put in the money. You don't know who's willing to buy the club. But my stance on Enoch, I say Enoch out with a force of them to kind of reform their ways. Yeah. I think it's impossible for us to actually get Enoch out because of the sheer kind of money that's involved. If you cast your mind back to when the Spurs fans chased out Irving Scholar, chased out Sir Alan Sugar, I mean, football was in a completely different way back then. And I think it was much easier to do stuff back mm-hmm. then than it is now with the sheer kind of money that's involved in the game. So yes, the message is Enoch out, but ultimately I don't think we can actually achieve that. So I think it's just about putting pressure on them to reform their ways.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. I think you're right that some pressure is needed, and I think it seems like they've bowed down to some fan pressure by saying that they're going to have a fan on the board now. So we should never forget that kind of collective protest and organisation can genuinely drive positive change, even in football, where it feels like you're not going to get what you want because the money men do the talking and make the decisions. Brian Mulholland asked about putting money into the club. You kind of answered that already, Ben. You've renewed your season ticket, and that's presumably because of your loyalty points, and you don't want to go to the bottom of the queue again. But yeah. How do you feel about that one? Sort of investing in the club whilst you know that there's an ownership that you don't necessarily agree with.
Look, ultimately, if you don't renew your season ticket, there's going to be someone else that's going to take that ticket off you. You know, there's a waiting list of what, 50,000-60,000, wherever it may be. If you don't take it, someone else will, whether it be someone from America or just someone that doesn't even like football, they're going to end up taking that ticket. They're never going to have a problem selling the tickets, Tottenham, and that's my opinion. The way I look at it is that I'm gonna renew my season ticket, and you know, that gives me an opportunity to kind of protest and get my views heard within the stadium. And I think that's what needs to be done. In terms of pumping money into the club, I'm not going to be buying merchandise. I'm not going to be buying off the food vendors. I'm going to drink outside the grounds and like go to the pubs and whatever. I think that's where you stop giving the money to the club. But when you're actually taking away the money from the season ticket, they're going to get that money anyway. Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well, pretty much.
Yeah, and like I've spent my whole life going to Tottenham, and I've made so many friends, and you know, they're basically like family to me, a lot of people I know from Tottenham. And that just gets ripped out of it. You know what I mean?
To be honest, though, when the Super League, when that was going to happen, we did very seriously, those couple of days, I was very seriously considering, I don't know if I want to go to this. I don't know if I want to carry on going to football. But once that stopped, obviously the message was still loud and clear how we felt about the board, but I think that we do want to be going to Tottenham, and we still love the club so much. We know when it's such a big part of you for so long, it's hard just to lose that overnight.
Yeah.
And so in terms of our season tickets, we're still going to be like, you know, we go with our grandpa every week. It's just like a tradition. It's a thing. Like, I don't want to lose that. But ultimately, we don't want to be supporting them in terms of the extra stuff. Yeah,
yeah. But we didn't pay the £60 to go to that Aston Villa game. That's for sure. I mean, what they were charging for that game is an absolute joke. And it's not like in terms of the money. Like, yeah, of course it is in terms of the money, but They can't be charging that much to go to an absolutely nothing game against Aston Villa with the season we've had and with the kind of bad will that they've got with the fans at the moment. You thought that they would maybe throw us a bone, like maybe just to save a bit of face, even if they didn't mean it. Just do something. Like it wouldn't even hurt their pocket that much even.
Ben, it's like you've never met Daniel Levy before. Sim, I really empathise with your feelings there about like, were the Super League to happen, would you still want to go? I went one step further. I was like genuinely thinking, God, am I a Spurs fan anymore? If the Super League happens, would I still support Tottenham? I quickly backtracked on that because a few days later it was all cancelled and I was back in love with the club again because we had Ryan Mason in charge. And that just shows sort of my fickleness as a fan. But it really tugged at my heartstrings. I felt so deeply about it. I was so upset and depressed about what the club was doing. Mm-hmm. This was completely the wrong thing to do for the fabric of British football, which I've grown up in. I'm a little bit older than you, Ben. I'm 37, and I sort of feel like it undermined my entire football supporting life. I put so much into it, and I felt like they were ripping it away from me, and it was really upsetting. So I'm with you all the way. I'm with you all the way.
Yeah, that's literally how I felt, to be honest. I was so disillusioned. You could even see we did a few live streams like during that period trying to like put pressure on the clubs to like get rid of the Super League and whatnot. But we were so disillusioned with football at that time, like with where it was going. Like, did we even care about the end of the season? What was top four meaning at that point? Like, no one knew anything. And I was very disillusioned with where football was heading. And like, I was completely what you say, Chris, like, I didn't want to support Tottenham at that point over those 2 days, because it's not just supporting a club that I love. Like, how can I support what they're doing? How can I support that? I can't. How, with good conscience, it would be a betrayal to what I've grown up with. So, like, I completely agree with that.
And you know, the one thing we've always had over Arsenal is that they're a franchise club that move for money, and losing the moral high ground would have been a tough one to take.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, it was an absolute disgrace what they tried to do, and people should never forget it. They should never, ever, ever forget it.
I completely agree.
And they never apologised, and it took them ages to apologise.
Yeah,
it took them ages.
And then when it did come, it was...
Yeah. Nothing from Levy. No, why did Levy find it so hard to just, apologize in a letter or something? He can't even put his name to it. Like, that was also something that clearly, I don't think they feel like they did anything wrong, to be honest. They just bowed to the pressure.
I agree. He's a very, very clever man, but he's also a very, very stubborn man.
Yeah, correct. That's very
really
true.
Refuses to accept his mistakes.
Yeah.
And until he does, I don't think we're going to progress with him at the helm, if I'm completely honest. Let's talk a little bit about the season that's just been. I'm really keen to hear your thoughts and a couple.
You want to cheer us up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, sorry to drag you through it. I just listened before we recorded to your and watched your player ratings for the season video, which I thought was really good. And I think a lot of our thoughts on players kind of aligned. We had a bit of a chat before, and there's a couple of exceptions, but on the whole, I'm with you with the majority of your ratings. One thing I wanted to ask you, because I think this is where we do differ. What would your rating have been for Jose?
I think we did mention it in the end, maybe briefly, but I think we gave him a four.
At the end. Okay.
Yeah, because I think at the end of the day, obviously the rails did fall off for Jose and our season, and I think at the end of the day, the way he was approaching games and the way, especially how we were finishing games, was, I mean, he never learned from his mistakes, and that was one of the biggest issue for me. But
also one that's too stubborn.
Yeah, for sure, he's very stubborn. We can see that through the season. Although I did feel like at certain points he did make concerted changes to the team to try different things, but unfortunately in the way he was playing, he was definitely too stubborn. But
it was like one bad performance for a player and they're outcasted for seven games or something.
At the end of his tenure was a bit like that. I feel like people gloss over a lot of the early parts, and I don't think it was like that the whole time. But when Jose was appointed, I didn't want Poch sacked. And me and my brother both didn't want Poch sacked. We were massive fans of Poch. We felt like he deserved the rebuild. We felt like he deserved the chance to rebuild this team that he had built. And yes, obviously the last year had gone wrong, despite even getting to a Champions League final. It had gone wrong for him, but we didn't think he... I think he had earned more time as the job he had done. He definitely earned more time to see out, even if he was to have a bad season. I think he had earned the right to have a bad season and then try and push on again. But once we took the decision to sack Pochettino, my choice was Mourinho. He was the choice I had in my mind as soon as we sacked Poch, because I thought he was the only thing we're missing as a team was that trophy. That's what we wanted, and I didn't think there was any point going for another rebuild manager just after having Pochettino, where we were just gone through 5 years of rebuild, culminating and still not winning anything. I think we were all at that time desperate for the trophy, and I was willing to go through whatever it was, whatever shit football was going to be played, whatever, I was willing to do the deal with the devil at the time to get that trophy, basically, which I thought he would bring us. Ultimately, I when the season started this season, I really thought it was going to happen. I thought we started so well. I thought it was all coming into place. But unfortunately, once the wheels fell off, as it does with Jose, it fell off very, very quickly. And unfortunately, I was wrong at the end. I have to admit, I was wrong to have wanted Mourinho. But I still think that, with the right purchases in the summer, things could have been different. But I backed Mourinho to the hill. I was on the Mourinho train, but unfortunately, the train didn't leave the station.
Yeah, I mean, I was the opposite to my brother when Poch got sacked. I mean, we were both on the same page in terms of wanting Poch to stay and he deserved the rebuild and what have you, but I was completely against the Jose Mourinho hiring at the time. I thought he was a dinosaur. I thought he would fall out with a lot of players. I thought the style of football didn't suit us. And I thought it just wouldn't work out. I didn't think he was suited for Tottenham. But having said that, as soon as he got the job, I quickly jumped on that bandwagon. I quickly just picked out all the positive things that my brother was saying and kind of ran with it. And I kind of bought into it very quickly. And now looking back on it, I kind of regret buying into it so quickly, because my original fears, I think, were kind of spot on.
That's really interesting. You allowed your heart to take over.
Yeah, basically.
But you're a football fan. You're allowed to do that. We're allowed to believe. I wished I was a bit more heart over head last year, because it ended up being the most miserable season in my Spurs fandom. Mm-hmm. I really did not like it one bit. I couldn't. I mean, you said it all, Sim. We got the shit football. We didn't get the trophy. Mm. And sitting through that shit football to end up with nothing is very frustrating. I mean, the trophy is finishing above Arsenal, essentially, isn't it? That's all we've got to take from the season.
It is, but the way I look at it, finishing above Arsenal and using that as a trophy, it's just so 5 years ago, you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
it is, isn't it?
It's like we've gone back 5 years, literally. Like, being above Arsenal now is a given for me. It should be a given. and that's what it has been the last 5 years. For me, mm-hmm. What success would have looked like this year is winning a trophy and getting in that top four. I mean, Arsenal should never have been in the conversation, especially with the season they had.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you mentioned the rebuild. Ishak says, how long will this painful rebuild take? What do you think, Sim?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. I think it's going to be a couple of years at least, because I think we need, so whoever comes in this, I mean, it's up in the air who's going to be in charge next season, but I think that whoever comes in next season is probably going to need a one transfer window, and I even don't think that this summer window is even going to be a good window for us in terms of how much money we're going to be able to spend and all that kind of stuff. I mean, at the moment, while I'm being asked this question, I don't know the future of Kane. I don't know the future of Bale. I don't know who's going to be managing us next season. So it's hard to really know where things stand coming into next season. But I think naturally it's at least 2 years, at least, because say we are, my choice for manager anyway is Graham Potter. And if we get Graham Potter in, I think it's going to take at least one season for the players to get acclimatized to how he likes to play and everything. Then it's going to take another window for him to get the players he wants and to judge his squad and who he wants out, who he wants in. So, and then probably another season probably after that. So I'm thinking 2 years at least for this rebuild where we're at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, look, if only we listened to Pochettino when he told us all of our problems.
Yeah.
If only, then we could be one of the strongest teams in England right now. We really could be. But ultimately, we are where we are. And I think my brother's right. 2-3 years, I think it's going to take us to back to where we were.
The one if, thing we, that, if we can ever get there, that is.
The one thing that makes me think we don't need to worry too much is, I mean, it's kind of what you said before, Ben. It's the fact that, you know, we're an established big team now. We've got the revenue, we've got the income coming in. That means we shouldn't need to drop out of the top six, seven clubs. And I do think we've got so much quality within the squad, untapped potential. You mentioned it in your video, rating some of the players. There are some quality players there who just need a bit of coaching to get it out of them. And I think Potter's the man for me as well to do that. I think there are other coaches as well. I think Ten Hag could do that as well. And that makes me positive even about next season. I don't think we'll have an outstanding year next year, but I think we can finish in the Champions League with the right coach. Particularly, it kind of hinges on this, if we can keep Harry Kane. And I wanted to ask you, so Elliot Cornish-Sheesby said, with the disconnect felt between the club and the fans of late, has the interview of Kane also turned the tide for you in terms of your connection with him? So not I don't know who wants to go first.
How do you feel
about Kane?
Not at all. I love the man to bits. I mean, he is basically saying what all Spurs fans are thinking. Let's get it right here. The club cannot match his ambitions. And yes, no one player is bigger than the club, but he is saying the right things. Yes, I know he's twerking himself out to Man City a bit. Let's be honest, he is doing that.
More than a bit, Ben.
No, I know that. But let's be honest here. Yeah, if the club was going in the right direction, he would want to stay here. That's the ultimate facts of the matter. Yeah. So you got to blame the hierarchy of the club that have made Kane disillusioned. And it's not just Kane that's disillusioned here. Half the fan base, if not the majority of the fan base, are disillusioned as well. So I don't blame Kane one second for being disillusioned at Spurs. He deserves a lot better than the pile of shit he has around him. And ultimately, I agree with the majority of what Kane has been saying.
If anything's going to put pressure on the board, it's going to be stuff like that. Yeah. Like Kane publicly saying his opinions, and I have absolutely no problem with it whatsoever. He's given his blood and sweat and his soul pretty much for the past 6 years at Tottenham. He absolutely loves the club. He's given everything for us, and he's been pretty much performing at the top level season in, season out. And it's now, look, it was one thing if we were consistently getting top four, and we were in top four this season. Then he said, look, even though we're in top four, I can be better. Look, we've been two seasons now outside Champions League. We've dropped out the top six this season. I mean, a player of Kane's ability, that's simply not where he wants to be, and it's completely understandable. And I don't understand any fan who thinks he's disrespecting the club by saying, obviously, we've disrespected him, but I think we haven't matched his ambitions. That's
the truth. I do get it on a certain level, where the timing of the interview, you know, just before the end of the season, I get that. And maybe it should have come out after the season had finished. But ultimately, I don't think we can match his ambition. And when you're looking at his age, 27 years of age, going on to 28, we're going for a rebuild that might take 2 to 3 years, and even at the end of that 2 to 3 years, there's no guarantees, let's be honest. So he can be 31, 32 years old and still be in the Europa League or even in the Europa Conference League, and that, for a player of his quality, that's just not where he should be.
Look, Kane's done his part, hasn't he? Kane has done his part. We can't ask any more from Harry Kane. And if he wants to play Champions League football, then you know what? Good luck to him, because
he shouldn't be Champions League football. He should be winning the Champions League, and exactly, he should be winning the Premier League regularly.
Exactly.
Nicely said. I mean, I struggle with the timing, I must admit. I thought it was uncomfortable for me personally. In the same way that Daniel Levy charging £60 for that Aston Villa game, I thought was outrageous. I thought Kane's timing was pretty outrageous as well. But having said that, I understand his sentiment, and I understand how football works. And this is, for me, it's the first stage in a process now, which is the Harry Kane exit strategy. He's decided, he's waited long enough, he needs to move on for the good of his career. And sadly, I think that's the first step of a series of steps across the summer with a view to him leaving. Now, whether Daniel Levy allows that to happen is another matter, because he still holds a lot of cards in this scenario. He's tied down to a long contract, and it's up to him. It's essentially up to him whether he wants to sell, and it depends what we're offered. And I guess we wait and see now. It's going to be a bit of a strange summer.
Yeah, I genuinely believe that if he doesn't get offered the money he wants, in like excess of like 130 million or something like that, I don't think he'll sell. He doesn't need to sell. He's got 3 years left in his contract. If he wants to sell for like 100 million, between 80 and 110 million, let's say around that ballpark figure, he can go next summer.
So I don't get why we would sell for that price this summer.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, completely agree. I like this question from Ali Jameson. He says, in 10 or so years' time, who from this era's biography are you most looking forward to reading?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Danny Rose, maybe.
Danny Rose?
Danny Rose.
Yeah, because he'll definitely be outspoken.
Danny Rose will talk a lot about the board, I tell you. Exactly. Yeah. I think... Look, everyone...
Wouldn't mind Mourinho's time with Spurs. I'd like to hear what his thoughts and things.
Maybe Pochettino.
And Pochettino. Yeah, the men in charge. I'd like to hear what they would
like
to say.
I sort of felt like All or Nothing was Mourinho's autobiography in a way. It seems to be entirely from his perspective and a bit of a puff.
Yeah, but not when the wheels really started to come off. That's when we saw the real thing. Yeah, we didn't miss that part. It was still kind of going... I wouldn't say swimmingly during that documentary, but it was... not bad enough.
Tottenham put out what they wanted us to see. Definitely. You know what I mean? There's definitely stuff that happened during the time of that documentary that wasn't put out, and that what they didn't want us to see what was actually going on.
Yeah. What about Joe Hart's biography? Just sort of documenting the indoor cricket they're playing across the season.
Oh yeah, I think love that. That'll be interesting. Wonder how many boundaries
that'll
be you
a got, riveting
yeah.
read. Absolutely riveting.
I would genuinely buy that. Intrigued by indoor cricket. I loved it. Boys, it's been such a pleasure to sort of chat and get to know you both a bit. And get the inside track on your channel. We'll really appreciate it. Where can people go if they want to hear more from you? And what's the future got in store?
Well, we don't really know, to be honest. I mean, next season, we're going to be back in stadiums. We're going to be still doing the studio-based stuff as well. I mean, our aim is just to keep growing and just to keep adding new bits of content and just to keep people interested at the end of the day and keep the community that I'm so proud of what we've built to keep growing and growing and growing. I think that's kind of our aims in the future. In terms of where people can find us, we're across all platforms. Maybe very soon we might be on Twitch as well, but we're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all under the name We Are Tottenham TV. So that's exactly where you can find us.
Yeah, and also over the Euros, important to know, over the Euros, yeah. We're going to keep up our content. We're going to be doing like watch-alongs for England games and all that kind of stuff. So we'll be supporting the Barmy Army through the Euros, hopefully. Oh, well, not many Spurs representatives, unfortunately, this time, but hopefully England will have a good Euros. And we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, going into next season and see how far we can get, pretty much.
To be honest, I think Southgate did us a favour not picking Dyer. Don't have to watch Dyer for another 4 weeks.
We don't have to defend Eric Dyer with our honestly.
Exactly.
We don't have to defend Eric Dyer's defending.
Exactly.
Yeah, boys, seriously, it's such a pleasure to talk to you, and honestly, keep up the good work. It's high quality stuff you're putting out there, and I think the thing that makes me enjoy it is it's got heart to it. The videos with your granddad are just really, really sweet. And there's a real sense of a soul there. And I think that's the difference between you and Arsenal Fan TV. That is soulless, and your channel certainly is not.
Thank you very much, Chris. And it's really been a pleasure coming on your podcast as well. Really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.